Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Charles didn't have just any coronary artery disease. He had Charles's coronary artery disease. Michelle didn't have just any heart attack. She had Michelle's heart attack. At VCU Health Poly Heart Center, we know every heart is unique. And as Virginia's only nationally ranked heart program, we'll keep them beating healthy and strong. VCU Health Poly Heart Center. Learn more at vcuhealth.org/heart.
Okay, let's go ahead and get started yet again. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's Sunday podcast of the Miller Frost Show. I am your host, Bad Gay, and sometimes America's most beloved self-loathing homosexual, Miller Frost, here as always with my dear fake black friend, white boy Malcolm X. Remember, you can get hold of me a couple different ways. My email is miller@millerfrostonline.com. I am on Twitter, even though I am still suspended. I guess my Hobo Jack Twitter timeout ends, I think, Monday or Tuesday. I don't know. I don't care. At Miller Frost Show is my Twitter handle. My Parler handle is at Miller Frost. And I also have a YouTube page with some show clips up there, just some audio of me and a couple different stories from each of the last couple of podcasts. And before I forget, we will not be here on Wednesday that I know of. Mama Frost is coming up on Tuesday. So I got to trudge all the way to Logan to pick her up. And we're going to be having a lot of fun and a lot of wine. And I'm sure White Boy Malcolm X will be there as well. Enjoying. I got some wine and Mama Frost is going to go get us some more of the good stuff. But we're looking forward to her visit. I think we'll see how I am in a week from today. If I sound despondent, if I'm, you know, banging my head against the desk too much, you'll know it was a, you know, some visits. I love family. You love, you know, hanging out. But what's the thing about fish? Good for about 3 days. Anyway, let's jump right in. And I thought I would mix things up. Don't worry, White Boy Malcolm X, because you're looking panicked over there. Kind of. We are going to start with a gay story and we're going to end with a smoking gun story. Although I don't think, hold on, let me check real quick. I'm going to cheat real quick. No, it is not out of Florida, but I do have a smoking gun story from Florida, so I have two smoking gun stories, but that's intermixed. But that's what I'm trying to say, is that we normally kind of have blocks, so we'll do like the gay block, and then we'll have some race stuff, and then we'll kind of mix and mingle some of the funner stories, the more lighthearted stories. But this time, kind of threw all the papers in the air and just kind of reshuffled. I want to kind of intermix things and just kind of try that as a new format. And we'll see how it works. If it doesn't work, then we'll go back to the old one. If it works, then we'll keep it. We'll see how things go. But let's go ahead and jump in with this hot mess of a story. And here is the headline: Meet the trans man who also identifies as a dog. And if you're like, well, Miller, that's crazy, folks. This is where we're going. Actually, we're probably already there. We're clearly already there. We already got one. I got a trans man who identifies sometimes as a dog. So let's find out about this one and whether he eats Purina, whatever dogs eat these days. Snapchat recently featured on its front page a trans man who also identifies as a dog. The story is part of a series called Extreme Love. And God, you can say that again. And details the fetish of puppy play by the trans man and his partner. It shows the trans man dressing in fetish gear and living as a dog. This includes fetching, sitting on command, and barking at strangers. I wonder if, I'm assuming there's a leash involved, but I wonder if the partner walks him outside to do his business, and if he carries a little baggie to pick it up. While most of those might view this as comedy, it's entirely serious for the participants waffle on whether or not it's sexual for them or just a platonic activity. You know, I have to say real quick, I tend to be very libertarian on a lot of things. And I always say, if you're not hurting kids or animals, and yes, public school teachers, I am talking to you when I talk about kids. If you're not hurting kids or animals, I really don't care what two or more consenting adults choose to do with themselves or each other. That none of my business. Like the we had the story about the Brussels, Belgium legs in the air party. And it's like, quite frankly, that was not a judgment on what they were doing. I like to laugh at it because I just thought it was hysterical. You had a bunch of anti-gay politicians who are flying to Belgium and going to gay sex orgies. That was what was funny to me. But, you know, the fact that they were doing that, not my thing. That is not my scene. But, you know, you got to do you. You do you. That is none of my business. So for these folks, I'm sure it's a little bit of both. But let's find out a little bit more. Trans species is a movement garnering more momentum online. What isn't these days? This entails individuals who identify as animals, similar to how people occasionally identify as another gender. And if you think that sounds kind of loopy, well, yes, it kind of is. But as we discussed over the last couple of podcasts, there are now approximately 7 genders, and I forgot to write them down again. So you've got male, female, transgender, agender, which is, I don't know what that is, the questioning gender, and there are a couple others, but there are apparently 7 ways you can identify your gender, or just pick none of the above, if you'd like. Unlike transgenderism, however, there is, of course, no science or medical diagnosis to back this phenomenon up, but give them time. It is often about sexual kicks rather than actual identity, which is why it becomes frustrating to transgender individuals to hear these fetishists use terminology such as identify as. This terminology has long since been used by transgender people to better describe their feelings and experiences. So if you are a fetishist who thinks you're a dog or likes to pretend that you think you're a dog, the transgender community has called dibs on identify as, so you're not allowed to say that. Okay, then. You don't want to... Folks, look, if you're into puppy play, you do not want to upset the transgenders. They'll be like knocking at your door going, uh-uh, identify as, that's our turf. Bad dog. Bad, bad dog. You stay off our turf. And that was the transgender woman who said that. Her voice hadn't gone back up yet. The question must also be raised as to why Snapchat felt it was appropriate to highlight a fetish on their front page. It's a wildly popular app that many children use, which answers the question. Let's normalize this sort of behavior so that kids just think, hey, if I want to be a dog today, I want to be a cat, and I want my partner to get a big giant sandbox that I can use as my litter box, that's what we're going to do. But you can't say that you identify as a cat, because then you're going to get the transgenders knocking on your door and getting angry with you. Fetishes such as these used to be reserved for the bedroom or specific adult websites, but it's becoming more and more normalized to act them out in public as often as possible. Yes, that it is. Okay, then. Like I said, folks, if you're into that, you do you. None of my business. How's this for a headline? Activist, yes, it's not a gay story, White Boy Malcolm X. I told you, I'm mixing it up. I am mixing it up today, so we're going to go right to race. How's this? Activist professor demands Vancouver Canucks change logo, claims it's cultural appropriation. And you're probably like, well, who would say that? But look at this, White Boy Malcolm X. I know. Folks, this is by another dopey, woke, white millennial. So some white kid beating himself up because he's white. And he's got privilege. And I guess that's what they do in Canada because they got nothing else to do. The Vancouver Canucks are the latest sports franchise to face pressure over their imagery and the alleged appropriation of Indigenous art and culture. According to the University of Manitoba history professor Sean Carlton, who, folks, is a dopey, woke, white millennial, the imagery depicted in the Canucks logo, an orca with elements of traditional Haiti art style, is appropriated. In light of sports teams in Cleveland, Washington, and Edmonton getting rid of racist and appropriated Indigenous teams' names and logos, it's time to have a discussion about the Vancouver Canucks Indigenous appropriated orca logo, tweeted Carlton. You know, when a liberal says, it's time to have a discussion, you know you're about to get screwed, folks. So White Boy Malcolm X, I do have a question for you. So he's complaining that the Vancouver Canucks Indigenous Orca logo has been appropriated. Can you actually appropriate an orca? I mean, isn't that like a whale? Well, that's what I thought. I mean, did they call dibs? Are they like the transgender folks for the identify as? Did the Indigenous folks up in Canada call dibs on using the orca as a logo? Jeez. What else are they going to appropriate? You know what they're going to do? They're going to get rid of the bald eagle, our national bird. They're going to be like, that's culturally appropriating because that bird was here before the white man got here, which means it was owned by the Native Americans. So look out. Sean Carlton's going to come for us next. How can you continue to develop meaningful relations with Coast Salish nations when you continue to profit from branding that is appropriating their art style, said Carlton. Carlton's analysis starts from a controversy sparked by Canucks goaltender Braden Holtby, whoever that is, who appropriated Indigenous imagery on his new mask. Heavens no. Some goaltending kid took some Indigenous imagery as well. Shame on him. He has since apologized. Damn straight he did. But why is Holtby getting criticized for doing what the team has done for years, asked Carlton. I don't know if I can read any more of this. Here, let's wrap this up. Canucks team owner Francesco Aquilini recently said that the logo might be tweaked, though he says the logo is Indigenous to the region, standing by it. Yeah, it's got an orca in it. It's just, I think no one can call dibs on that, but I could be wrong. Carlton, however, believes the logo should be retired. Okay, you go there, Sean Carlton. Nothing better to do. Complaining about a stupid logo. And folks, I've looked at the logo. It's basically a C for Canucks with an orca whale coming in. I mean, I don't know what he's talking about with traditional Haiti art style. I don't know what he's talking about. It's a damn whale. You cannot appropriate a whale. Stupid Canadians. And I don't mean all Canadians, when they go liberal up there, they really go liberal. I have a really dear friend up in Toronto. It's funny. I met him when we were in Tokyo, and he moved back. And so I called him once. I was like, "I'm coming to visit you." I thought he was in Vancouver. He's like, "No, I'm in Toronto." I'm like, "I don't know. You got like Canada, like five cities, maybe. You got Vancouver, Toronto, Quebec, and Montreal. You got four cities in Canada. That's it." And I had a 25% chance, and I flubbed it completely. Okay, I'm not reading this article. Just the headlines is interesting. These are the most hated cities in the United States. This is from BGR. And I was just going to read off the list of most loved and most hated cities in America. So the number one, White Boy Malcolm X, the number one most loved city in the United States is Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I think they shoot black people up there. That's horrible. Fort Worth, Texas is number two. St. Paul, Minnesota is the third. San Diego, California, I can see that. That's number four. That's my old stomping ground. I lived in San Diego for a couple of years. Fun times. Fun times indeed. Denver, Colorado, White Boy Malcolm X. There we go. There is our old stomping ground at number five. And you'll never believe who is number six. Portland, Oregon, of all frickin' places. I guess it is probably loved because they just love to burn it down. San Francisco, California is number seven, and I guess because, hey, it might be fetishists who love the stench of urine as they go pick up dirty needles. Nashville, Tennessee is number eight, and you know, White Boy Malcolm X, I bet you the folks in Nashville probably actually are enjoying COVID and no travel, and you're like, why would you say that, Miller? I've read a couple of articles where Nashville, Tennessee has become like was at one time, the bachelorette capital of the United States. So anytime some dopey millennial chick was getting married, apparently they'd all get on a plane, her and her girlfriends, and they'd all go to Nashville, and they'd go party it up. So can you imagine living in Nashville and you're just inundated nonstop with drunk, hysterical millennial chicks? No matter where you go, they're everywhere. You know, drunk and screaming. And having a gay old time, but not really. But they're having a good old time out there. And I'd be like, like a year. Give us more COVID. Just keep those stupid bachelorettes away from us. Finishing off that top of the list is Indianapolis, Indiana, and oddly enough, Washington, D.C. Probably if you are a member of the ruling class, that would be your favorite city because that's just like you get access to the printing presses. Now, on the flip side, are you ready, White Boy Malcolm X, for the top 10? And we'll start at the bottom here. Number 10, Miami, Florida. Number 9, Riverside, California. And if you've, speaking of San Diego, if you live in San Diego and you know that someone's coming down from Riverside, you refer to them as Rivertuckians because Riverside is, we used to call it Rivertucky back in the day. I don't know if they still do that. Colorado Springs, Colorado, is number 8, which probably is because they're just full of white supremacists. Number 7 is Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which is full of gay white racists. Number 6 is New York, New York, which is full of, what is that, full of hysterical millennial women who riot and burn. Number 5 is St. Louis, Missouri, which is full of God knows what. 4 is L.A., 3 is Baltimore, 2 is Vegas, and number 1 is Detroit, Michigan. So those are the most hated cities in America. I don't live in any. Boston didn't do really good. It didn't do really bad. We're the porch that was just right. We're good to go. This is a Fox News story, and here's the headline. Biden gets Buttigieg husband's name wrong, calls him Kristen. Which, let's face it, that might be their little kink, calling him Kristen. But let's find out a little bit. I'll tell you what, though, before I dig into this. I was looking for gay news today, and the Queens, folks, the Queens are loving this story that Pete Buttigieg, who is the former mayor of some rinky-dink Indiana town, will be running the nation's transportation department. Like, he has zero qualifications for this job, but the Queens are just, oh, we got a gay cabinet-level post now. Oh, they're just, the fact that he's not anywhere near qualified for this role. I don't think he could fill a pothole if his life depended on it. But he's apparently, just because he's gay, we're going to just slot him in there so Joe can go deal with someone else and give some other token minority another cabinet-level position. Let's not get the best and brightest. Let's just fill the slots with these sorts of clowns. Anyway, let's find out a little bit more about Kristen Buttigieg. President-elect creepy Uncle Joe Biden, during a speech on Wednesday, accidentally referred to the husband of former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg by the wrong name. The gaffe came while Biden was formally announcing Buttigieg, his Democratic primary rival, and his pick for transportation secretary. Jill and I have always enjoyed seeing Pete and Kristen, or Chasten, I should say, together on the campaign trail, Biden said, after listing his nominee's credentials, which probably took him about 10 seconds. Chasten has become a close friend of Jill and mine. During the primary, Biden took a shining to Buttigieg. Ugh. I don't even want to know what's going on there, folks. Who he said reminded him of his late son, Beau Biden, a former Delaware attorney general who had urged his father to make a third run for the White House. Beau died in 2015. It's always the bad ones that manage to linger on. I mean, that thing with Beau is very sad. I'm not making fun of that. Don't get me wrong, but to be left with the crackhead as the last remaining son. But I can't say that Hunter is a whore to China because that might get me suspended on Twitter for another week. Screw you, Twitter. And in keeping things mixed up, this is a New York Post story, and how's this for a headline? Man arrested for chasing Maine McDonald's employees with chainsaw. So yes, folks, this putz took a chainsaw to McDonald's. Employees at a McDonald's in Maine weren't loving it when a would-be customer started chasing them with a chainsaw. Alice Sweet entered, and folks, you would hear the name Alice Sweet, and you would be like, well, that sounds kind of like someone's grandmother, but look at this White Boy Malcolm X. Look at this dope. So it's actually a guy, folks. He is a dopey white millennial, and I'm sure he's just insane because his parents named him Alice, and so he just snapped and took a chainsaw to McDonald's. Let's find out more about Alice Sweet. Alice Sweet entered a McDonald's in Portland, of course it's Portland, around 3:30 p.m. Tuesday with a chainsaw and revved the weapon at employees behind the counter, the Westbrook Police Department said in a statement. Sweet then stole some food and a drink before fleeing the restaurant, police said. The manager later confronted the madman, but then Sweet began chasing him with the chainsaw, police said. Cops said the 26... Hold on, so let me understand this white boy Malcolm X. So Alice Sweet, loving Alice Sweet, goes to McDonald's, got a chainsaw in hand, and then he just starts revving up the chainsaw at the employees who are standing behind the counter, just kind of, I'm sure they're looking like shell-shocked, like, what the hell have we gotten ourselves into? And so he goes behind the counter, gets himself, I don't know what that, you know what? McRib is back. Maybe he got himself a McRib or two. So he gets some sandwich, he gets a cup, he fills it with ice, he puts it on the soda machine. So I don't know where the chainsaw is at this point. Maybe he's got it, you know, hoisted on his back. He takes the food, he takes the drink, and he goes. And then the manager goes after him. I guess he puts the food down, and then he gets the chainsaw and goes after the manager, chasing him. Poor manager, who just wants him to pay for the damn McRib and the soda. He probably got himself an extra large soda, too, so that thing is more expensive. And he probably wanted him just to pay for it, and the guy goes after him with the chainsaw then. Cops said the 26-year-old of Portland also damaged two cars that were parked at the fast food joint. Officers who responded to the scene ran after Sweet and tracked him down to arrest him. I wonder if he cried white boy Malcolm X like Commander Red, that little bitch with the flamethrower. And if you folks are like, who the hell is Commander Red, Miller? Commander Red was one of these Antifa thugs walking around, this ginger kid. He called himself Commander Red. That's not my name for him. And he had a flamethrower, and the cops got him on the ground. And he started crying like a little bitch. I wonder if Alice Sweet did the same thing. Sweet has been charged with robbery, criminal mischief, refusing to submit to arrest, and violation of conditions of release. Now, if he were in Florida, folks, they would all be misdemeanors. So I don't know what they are like in Maine. I don't know what kind of time Alice Sweet's going to be serving. But we'll have to keep an eye on that story. The chainsaw at McDonald's. I guess it's better than White Castle. This is from the Epoch Times, and here's the headline. Public servants in Victoria told not to say husband or wife in inclusive language guide. The Andrews state government has told Victorian public servants to avoid terms such as wife, husband, madam, or sir when working with LGBT... What? Hold on a second. LGBTIQ plus people. So, hold on a second, folks. There. Had to just slam my head into the desk a couple times. White boy Malcolm X, what the hell? We added another letter to the alphabet. I joke about half the alphabet. We're getting there. LGBTIQ plus. I figured the plus, look, if you are a professional gay and this is your bread and butter, stop it. Stop it with the letters right now. The plus covers it. You could just say LGBT plus and call it a day. We throws in the lesbians, the gays, the bisexuals, the transgenders, and I think is intersex. Good God, whatever the hell that is. Questioning, you don't need the Q. Questioning community, they don't really count until they commit. You know, just because you dabble in it once or twice doesn't make you part of the club. You're not in the tribe unless you commit. I committed. I am full bore in. Bisexual, you're kind of half in. You're 1 foot in, 1 foot out. I am fully on committed. The lesbians are fully on committed. Transgender, if they go through with all that, they are doubly so. We got to move the T to the front because they really are committed. But intersex, question, whatever. Folks, you need to just stop. Cut it out. Just stop it right now. Ugh. And you wonder why by Malcolm X, why I wanted to mix things up. Because I'm aggravated. But if I had like three of these stories back to back to back, man, I would have been really aggravated. But let's find out more about this hot mess. Judges will also move towards using gender-neutral terms such as citizen instead of traditional terms such as Mr. So it is no longer Mr. Smith, it is Citizen Smith. Well, hell, they should just say comrade at that point. The 11-page trust me, they're getting there, slowly but surely. The 11-page document published this week outlines how public servants are not to exclude and devalue non-heterosexual people and their relationships by assuming a person's gender. The document adds that while most men use he and most women use she, some people use gender-neutral pronouns like they, them. And if you need a good example of that, Sam Smith. Doesn't have any time to write a hit song anymore, folks. He's just kind of, I don't know what he's, you know, he's on fumes at this point, but he's got all the time in the world to worry about what pronouns he's using. Those who get it wrong are advised to apologize promptly. Like, what is that dopey, another Canadian, what the hell's going on up there? We're like, White Boy Malcolm X, well, they closed the border, thank God, if all this nuttiness is going on, but we need to go up there and see what's going on. But Shawn Mendes, thank you. Shawn Mendes was the dopey Canadian kid that had to apologize for using Sam Smith's wrong pronouns. He said he, because Sam is a he, but Sam thinks he's a they, so poor Sean got in trouble. Anyway, let's restart that sentence. Those who get it wrong are advised to wimp out and apologize promptly and not give up until they get it right, the document states. Can you see White Boy Malcolm X, one of these pansy pajama boy bureaucrats trying to, you know, not give up? I am not going to give up. I'm not going to say, Mr. Smith, he wanted the piece of paper. I'm going to practice Citizen Smith. They wanted the piece of paper. Citizen Smith, they wanted the piece of paper. I am not going to give up on this.
I bet, girlfriend. I bet you won't. Victorian Health Minister Martin Foley said that this approach was about being polite, reported News Corp's Herald Sun.
I was always brought up with the notion that it's always best to be polite, and it's being polite to someone to not take assumptions as to their marital status, their sexuality, or their role in life, he said. It's also polite, folks, to not be a high-maintenance queen and demand that everyone kowtow to your special pronouns of the day. You know, it's one of these things where if someone says he or refers to you as a man and you're, today you wake up and you identify as a dog, whatever the hell, just keep your mouth closed and just, okay, whatever, it's fine. I'm not going to get butthurt about someone assuming that because I look like a man, I might not be a man because today I have my special pronouns. It works both ways, Martin. It really does work both ways. Anyway, picking back up. However, Bella DeBrera from the Think Tank Institute of Public Affairs told News Corp that, oh, that is the hated Murdoch family. They own Fox News. That the Andrews government was obsessed with identity politics. You think? The obsession with whether Victorian public servants should be using wife or husband epitomizes an unelected bureaucratic class obsessed with identity politics and not focused on the needs of mainstream Victorians, she said. It tells you everything you need to know about the Andrews government, that it is more focused on policing the language of public servants than getting the 500,000 unemployed Victorians devastated by its draconian lockdowns back to work. Hey, listen, Bella, they're all getting paid. They don't care. Rita Panahi, a conservative opinion columnist, said in an op-ed that ceding linguistic territory to the left was divisive and destructive. The trans activist agenda has had enormous success in silencing critics by attacking anyone who questions or corrects falsehoods as dangerous bigots, she said. No kidding. Enough of that crazy going on there. So they are going to call you citizen. They are not going to call you Mr. or Mrs., so you're won't have to get butthurt if they don't use your fancy pronouns. Speaking of people devastated by draconian lockdowns, this is a post-millennial story, and here's the headline. American professionals who advocate for lockdowns don't have to make any real sacrifices. And I have been saying that for I don't know how long at this point. I call them the COVID Karens, the Karen class. And it's not just women. COVID Karen can be a man. It's just the mentality. But they don't really give a crap. I mean, as long as the employees at Whole Foods and the Tesla dealership are classified as essential employees and they have to go to work, they don't care about movie theaters or concert halls or bars and restaurants or any of that crap. They're going to sit in their nice fancy houses and, you know, have food brought in and don't have to worry about much of anything. But let's see what the post-millennial has to say about this. A little bit of it. It's quite a damn long article. America's professional class and the big companies that employ them are doing just fine. They can continue to advocate for lockdowns because, other than the occasional canceled brunch, they are barely affected by the closures that have shuttered city centers and disemployed people across the country. America's professional class and their corporate employers make sacrifices on their own terms while dictating that everyone else do as they are told. Americans in the service or in hospitality sectors have been left out in the cold, unable to earn a living because of government shutdowns and corporate layoffs, all while being told they are selfish for wanting to work. Yet do not get COVID Karen angry. In the New York Times, Eve Pizer wrote that while the wealthy and the highly educated haven't entirely escaped the soul-crushing effects of the virus, and don't you feel so bad for those folks. It's so hard being them. Poor princess, it's so hard being you folks. You COVID Karens, safe in your warm houses. It's so hard being you. That's how I talk to my cat. But that's how you got to talk to them, because they're like little kids. They have also been... No, I don't talk to my cat like that. I'm kidding. But I do talk to pansy leftist liberal Karens like that. They have also been, on the whole, getting richer. She notes that it has become clearer than ever that you don't have to be a bad person to live in an immoral system. I think they're alluding to systemic racism and white supremacy. There's one thing missing in this analysis, and it's this. The immoral system in which these people are living is one in which they are complicit. In fact, they help create it, fully and intentionally. They profit from it financially, and in their moralizing over the sacrifices and the lie that we are all in it together, they profit from it spiritually. The wealthiest, comfiest Americans, in sitting home, buying Peloton so they don't have to risk life and limb going to the gym, are not doing their part. They are not sacrificing at all. Amen. Who wrote this? Libby Emmons. Amen, sister. Amen. America's upper class, the class that can work from home with little to no disruption, who have ample space for their kids to set up virtual learning classrooms, who order deliveries of all their essentials and worldly goods, are not the ones making real sacrifices, but they are the ones setting policy. Man. And I will finish it up with this. America's lowest wage earners are the sacrificial lambs of coronavirus shutdown policies. Did you hear White Boy Malcolm X? I think they're going to get another $600 check. You can't work for months. You're months behind on your mortgage or your rent and trying to get food together and all this. You're barely making it, and they're going to send you $600. Lucky you, huh? They are the ones who are unable to feed their families while being told that we are all in it together. We are not all in it together. Those who are wealthy, prosperous, educated elites are showing their true colors. So long as they are fine and well cared for, they simply don't care what happens to anyone else. Amen, sister. Libby Emmons. I wonder if she's on Twitter. I'll have to follow her once I'm off of Hobo Jack's Twitter timeout. And since we're on the subject of COVID Karen, quickly, here's another article on collateral damage, which is something we've been talking about on the program for a couple months as well. And this is from Boston.com. Officials, pandemic fueling overdose deaths in Connecticut. Overdose deaths from opioids are on the rise in Connecticut as the coronavirus pandemic has compounded social stressors and increased isolation. And I think we had a story a few months ago about the increase of these sorts of deaths in, I believe, Maine as well. I mean, the whole Northeast is, man, they do like their opioids up here, but which is unfortunate, to say the least. But now we're getting a story out of Connecticut. But COVID Karen doesn't care because she's in her house. State health officials said Friday that the state is projected to record more than 1,300 overdose deaths by the end of the year, the Hartford Courant reports. That compares to 1,200 fatal overdoses in 2019. Through October, the state had seen a 13% increase in drug overdose deaths compared to the same period last year. Connecticut has recorded a 300% increase in opioid overdose deaths since 2012, said Dr. James Gill, the state's chief medical examiner. The data reflects a national trend, the Courant reports. The Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported this week that about 81,000 people had fatally overdosed on drugs between June 2019 and May 2020, the highest number ever recorded in a 12-month period. Fentanyl, a highly dangerous synthetic opioid, has been involved in about 85% of Connecticut's overdose deaths this year. Miriam Delphin Rittman, commissioner of the State Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, said at a virtual roundtable discussion, the horse tranquilizer xylazine. Holy crap, White Boy Malcolm X. Who the? You must be one hell of a junkie, folks, if you need a horse tranquilizer. Damn. What? This is a serious story, White Boy Malcolm X. You should not be... Folks, White Boy Malcolm X did have a good point, though. He goes, if someone identifies as a horse, going back to our first story, meet the trans man who also identifies as a dog. So if someone identifies as a horse, then it probably is appropriate for them to take xylazine, probably. But anyway, it is also increasingly showing up in overdose deaths. Well, this, folks, this is, it's a shame. It really is a shame, all this collateral damage of drug addictions and drug overdoses and, you know, people being pushed into bankruptcy because they're not allowed to work. But COVID Karen is happy, folks. So that's all that matters. This is a Federalist story, and here's the headline with this one. New paper provides blueprint for university trigger warnings. Don't use them. Oh, hold on a second, folks. If you are a dopey pajama boy millennial living in your mother's basement, or you are some hysterical millennial chick on the verge of rioting in New York, I'm just giving you a trigger warning right now. I'm going to be talking about trigger warnings, and that might freak you both out. So I'm just saying. So let's redo that headline. New paper provides blueprint for university trigger warnings. Don't use them. A new paper from the James G. Martin Center for Academic Renewal. Well, they've got an uphill battle, don't they? Offers universities recommendations on the use of trigger warnings that, in essence, tell campuses don't use them. Trigger warnings have been enormously controversial, the center wrote. According to some estimates, around 51% of academics use trigger warnings. God. Some universities have begun to require that faculty use trigger warnings before they present potentially sensitive material, which, folks, if you don't know what that is pretty much anything written by a dead white guy. However, study after study has found them ineffectual. Can you see this White Boy Malcolm X, some dopey professor, with his trigger warning and be like, now, students, in my briefcase there, I am going to take out a book, and I want to let everyone know that it was written by a man, and it's someone who identifies as a man, and his pronouns are he, his, and this white man, he wrote this book, and he's, well, I want to let you know that he's white. It's okay. Don't cry. Oh, no, don't cry, kids. Don't cry, kids. It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right, kids.
You know they have to do that. I'm sure they do, and I'm sure some hysterical whatever goes nuts in there. Worse, the center continued, trigger warnings have been used to shield students from merely controversial ideas. And such warnings have been placed on many widely read books and plays. Examples include Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn and F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby. I rest my case. If universities do choose to move forward with their employment of trigger warnings, the North Carolina-based nonprofit gives institutions a blueprint on how to use the policies to mitigate academic consequences. White Boy Malcolm X, would you like to hear the paper's five recommendations? I knew you would. Here they are, folks. If you are a dopey college professor and you want to whatever with your trigger warnings, here are some recommendations that this center have for you. Number one, strongly discourage the use of trigger warnings, but allow instructors to choose whether to include them on their syllabi or in courses. Make all syllabi public, preferably months ahead of the course or module. And you know, folks, you are a snowflake from hell if it takes you months to get yourself in a non-hysterical state looking at a syllabus on what you might have to do for work. Sounds like Yale University. Allow individual students to decide on their own whether they can handle a specific content. So I guess they need the... I don't know if I can handle that.
Well, I can't take any classes because I can't handle any of it. But I want my $150,000 gender studies master's degree, but I don't know how I'm going to get it. And I can't pay back my student loans because That's $150,000 for a worthless degree, and I'm only going to be a barista at Starbucks for the rest of my life.
Idiots. Number three, never require instructors to use trigger warnings. That is definitely not Yale University. Adopt the this is number four, folks. Adopt a statement in support of free expression. If you can see that on a college campus, hell truly has frozen over. And number five, which will never, ever, ever, ever happen, defend instructors who teach controversial subjects. What just popped into my head? That professor, I think it was right after George Floyd got killed, and someone wanted to let all the black students out of the exams, and he was like, no, not going to happen. And I think they suspended him. He got in trouble for it. He should have just said, I tell you what, if you're black, identify as black, whatever. If you got any melatonin in your skin, hey, you're out of here. Don't worry about it. Here's your degree. Don't even bother the rest of the couple of years. Just, you're never going to pay the student loans back anyway. So that's that, folks. Good luck with those trigger warnings. This is a pink news story, and is, folks, one of my New Year's resolutions is to never discuss the Tiger Queen again. But since it's only December 20th, we are going to discuss them because I got 11 more days. Although we probably only have Wait by Malcolm X. We got this show. We got the show on the 27th because Mama Frost is in town this week, so I won't be doing one this Wednesday. And then maybe a couple days before New Year's, which would be the 30th. Yeah, we can do a kind of a almost New Year's Eve special. Or we could just move it to Thursday. But no, we're going to be... I'm not doing a damn thing on New Year's Eve. What do I do every year on New Year's Eve? I'm in bed by 9 o'clock. It's true. I know. It's sad. I used to stay up late. Used to stay up till midnight and watch the ball drop. But that was back in the day. Remember like when there was Dick Clark's Rockin' Eve? I mean, it kind of got dumb at the end of the day. But, you know, back when you were like, I was a kid, I was like, oh, like 9 or 10, I'll get to stay up till midnight. And there was Dick Clark on the TV. And that's what you would watch was Dick Clark. And you'd watch the ball drop. And I've actually been to New York and watched the ball drop twice. I stood in that hot mess twice. To do that, because once wasn't enough, stupid. I had to get it in twice, and then I just quit watching it. Like they got Ryan Seacrest doing it for Dick Clark, and he's horrible. And CNN got Miss Anderson Cooper on there with that raging ginger chick. What's her name? I forget her name. It's stupid. Kathy whatever. Not Kathy Bates. Kathy Griffin. I just don't watch it anymore. And plus, I'm 51. I want to go to bed early. Get up early. I can walk up to Starbucks and everyone else is asleep because they're whatever. But yeah, I'll be in bed 9, maybe 10 o'clock. Maybe 10. I'll stay up. I'll be a wild man and stay up till 10 this year. Anyway, let's talk about Joe Exotic. And here's the headline. Bless his heart. Joe Exotic sues Trump administration for denying his pardon request because apparently 2020 has a few final plot twists left. And I asked President Trump to pardon the Tiger Queen because we had those tigers that ate that monkey in England, ripped that damn thing apart. Well, the stupid monkey, you know, to give the lions the credit, it was the monkey's fault because the monkey escaped and went right to the lion's den. Dumb monkey. And so he kind of got what he deserved, but I said we need to get the Tiger Queen out there because that would not happen with the Tiger Queen. But anyway, let's find out what's going on with Tiger Queen's pardon or lack thereof. As the final days of Trump's presidency slip away, desperate Tiger Queen star Joe Exotic is suing the U.S. Department of Justice for refusing his request for a pardon. The 57-year-old gun-toting gay redneck is currently staring down the barrel of 22 years in federal prison for a litany of offenses. The haircut is not included, but do include a murder for plot hire to kill his nemesis, Carol Baskin, who is rumored to have killed her husband. Since finding fame with Netflix's Tiger Queen, Exotic has been relentlessly pursuing a presidential pardon from his fellow reality TV star Donald Trump, but with his many groveling requests going nowhere, he's decided to change his tactics. Lawyers for Exotic have filed a 6-page complaint in which White Boy Malcolm X wasn't his appeal or his pardon request. It was like a couple hundred pages, and I'm assuming it was written in crayon. With big block letters, so he didn't have much on each page, but he sent the president like a couple hundred pages. I wouldn't read that damn thing either. I'd be like, I'm not going to deal with that. Just give me something, bullet point it, Tiger Queen. Just make it boom, 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 and then I'll make a decision. I don't need 257 pages. Anyway, let's pick that back up. Lawyers for Exotic have filed a 6-page complaint in which they accuse acting pardon attorney Rosalind Sargent Burns of not presenting the formal request directly to Trump, something they claim she was required to do. Because of this, the complaint says the rejection of the request shouldn't be valid, and it specifically names Donald Trump Jr. as a supporter of Exotic's cause. Can you imagine poor Donald Trump Jr. is like, how the hell did I get roped into this train wreck? Do you want to hear more about this wipe? Yeah, I knew you would. Many people have come out and publicly expressed their disagreement with Joe Exotic's conviction and subsequent sentence. Among those are members of the president's own family, it states. Donald Trump Jr. has been an advocate for Joe Exotic to be pardoned. We know that now. Joe Exotic's attempts to get the president's attention have been growing more and more desperate as time goes by. He's tried letters. He's tried Fox News. He's tried a $94 million civil rights lawsuit against the federal government. I'm assuming this is where he's claiming he has been used as a sex doll by the prison guards, wherever he is stationed. They apparently use him like Harvey Weinstein used actresses. His husband, which I believe is just a boy toy, but his husband even tried a 1,350-mile road trip to Washington, listen to this, white boy Malcolm X, in a tour bus emblazoned with Exotic's face. God. The horror of, can you imagine just driving down the highway and all of a sudden this bus pulls up next to you and there's the Tiger Queen with that hideous mullet, that lesbian haircut, and that bleach blonde lesbian haircut staring back at you with that puss on his face. Ugh, I'd wreck my car. None have succeeded, and now with just 32 days left of Donald Trump's presidency, this latest frantic act suggests that Joe's more than a little worried that his precious pardon won't come through. Poor Tiger Queen. I feel bad for the Tiger Queen. President Trump, pardon the Tiger Queen. Set him free. It's over anyway. I have to say, folks, this next story, if you are employed at the Smoking Gun and you're listening to the show, I have to say that this is a very weak story. I expect more out of the Smoking Gun if I have a story involving Florida and an arrest. I expect a little bit better. Here's the headline. More seasons beatings from Sunshine State. And of course, folks, you know, it's the holiday season, so people like to beat each other up, especially if they're out in line at a Walmart and they're vying for the PlayStation, whatever, 5,000, whatever's out these days. But this is a weak, weak story for a smoke. I would have proudly ended this show with this Smoking Gun story because it involves crime in Florida. Two things that go well together, like a queen and a vodka cocktail. But this story, I stuck it in the middle of the pile because it's kind of weak. But let's find out a little bit more. You judge, folks. You be the judge of that. A Florida woman was arrested yesterday for battery after allegedly striking her sister with a Christmas decoration during a 2 a.m. domestic dispute, according to court records. So, folks, let me amend my prior statement that no good comes from being out after midnight. No good comes from being up after midnight, which is why my ass will be abed at 9 o'clock on New Year's Eve, because I have never been arrested, and I sure as hell have never been arrested out or in my house doing something stupid at 2 a.m. like these folks. But let's find out more. Police allege that Shirley Rogers, 55, was arguing with her boyfriend when her sibling sought to defuse the situation. However, that attempt failed, cops say. You could say that again. The victim told investigators that while she was trying to calm the defendant down, Rogers, seeing it right, and look at that. That is a smoke. Look at that white boy, Michael Max. God, that is a smoking of this chick. Whoa. Man, oh man. Honey, lay off the good stuff. Anyway, let's pick that back up. Rogers, seen it right, pushed her in the chest and then grabbed a Christmas cone and stuck her in the torso with the holiday ornament. So she tried to stab her with a Christmas cone. An arrest affidavit notes that the weapon was a beaded cone tree used for decoration. Well, that's a crappy-ass way to stab someone. Get a knife, like all the other good folks at the Smoking Gun stories do. Well, here's where the drama gets good, white boy Malcolm X. Upon being struck by the Christmas cone, a beaded cone tree used for decoration, folks, the victim asked Roger's boyfriend to call 911. So let's do a quick summary. So the woman, Shirley Rogers, is fighting with her boyfriend. The sister comes in. Thank you, white boy Malcolm X. Folks, you really should have listened to last Wednesday's podcast. So, folks, Shirley's sister was a violence interrupter. And we know, well, we know what a failure that was. Folks, in D.C., they have violence interrupters, and they actually had arrested a violence interrupter for perpetrating violence. He murdered some guy. So she could have been like, sister, stop. Stop doing that. And then the sister gets mad at her for sticking her nose in her business because she's like, you know, don't you mind your own business. And she gets a cone and sticks her. And was like, ah! So instead of saying like, ah, you stupid bitch, why'd you stab me with the cone? She's like, call 911, call 911. So they're calling 911 over being poked with a cone. You people in Florida, man. Officer, and as I always say, folks, I do love you folks in Florida. You are good humored about this. Officers responding to Rogers' residence in Oxford, a community about 85 miles northeast of Tampa, noted that the victim had a small vertical cut on her left side. In the area, she indicated the defendant had struck her. The woman also complained of pain in her left side and ribs. And this is one of the other reasons I hate this story, because apparently this might have been the only time. Shirley has made it to 55 and not been arrested in Florida, because she says she was arrested on a misdemeanor, of course, battery charge, and booked in the Sumter County Jail. But there is no listing of Shirley's other offenses, and the smoking gun always lists those things out. I mean, there was one I had to take a couple deep breaths because this guy's rap sheet was so long. It was like, and da-da-da-da-da. But this one, she made it to 55, and all she's facing is a misdemeanor battery charge for stabbing her tattletale sister. If you're Shirley's sister, honey, there are a lot. Now, wonder Portland, where is that story? I got a story coming up about 911, calling 911 on things. Now, wonder people want to, like, make it illegal to call 911 or just disband the cops, because poor cops are like, ah, crap. First of all, you've got to be a really put up, bless your heart, if you're a police officer in Florida, the crazy you got to go through. But can you imagine having to show up at 2 a.m. and you got Shirley and the boyfriend and the sister and the cone and a little droplet of blood? You're like, what has my life become? I got to deal with these three schmucks. Okay, that is done. Speaking of the criminal justice system, this article is from LGBTQ Nation. So thank you, folks, at the LGBTQ Nation. You did not stick the I in there for intersex. Is that right? Yeah, that is right. Okay. And you did not add the plus, which means you're either being brave or you're being stupid, because they're going to come after you for not recognizing the I in the plus. But here's the headline on this. Father sentenced to prison for hiring a hitman to ambush his gay son. And before we dig into this, I have to say that in looking back, I think I got away with it. I was pretty lucky when I came out as being gay. I came out when I was like 21, and that was 1993 in South Carolina. And for me, you know, I grew up in a very conservative area, and I grew up in a conservative household, and both my parents were Republicans. My dad was until the day he passed, and my mom still is. You know, Mama Frost still is, but they nothing. I mean, it's like a big yawn. I guess they already knew. They're like, when's this kid coming out? Jesus, he's 21 already. Better get this thing going. But I came out, and it was like, okay. Yeah, my dad was like, finish school, go on, and whatever. They could care less. And my friends, nobody cared. And it was just one of these things where I didn't face the backlash that I know a lot of people do. And it is very unfortunate that that people have to go through, you know, literally being disowned by your families, cut off, isolated, treated horribly. If you like this story, we'll get into. The father hires a hitman to go after the kid. He doesn't want to accept him. And so in a lot of ways, you know, I have been very fortunate. And yes, I guess it could be white supremacy. I guess I drew a lucky, because I'm white and white people don't beat their gay kids, except for this Italian family. But for the most part, anyway, long story short, I was very fortunate. But I know that some people are not, which is pretty horrible. But let's find out even worse than horrible is this story. How's this? A 75-year-old Italian man has been sentenced to 2 years in prison after he hired a hitman to attack his son and his son's partner. And I thought I had it bad with my ex's family. God. No, they were actually mostly gracious. When his mother, I will say this though, when his mother figured out that we were not just roommates, it got frosty there for a little bit, but you know, his father was cool. His siblings were cool. The extended family was very gracious and always very nice. She was not. She got really, really frosty with me, but oh well. The ongoing terror campaign started when the son appeared in a newspaper with another man. The dad reportedly paid a man 2,500 euros to attack his son, a surgeon, and break his finger so he couldn't work. It wasn't the first time the father had hired goons to ambush the gay couple. The problem started in 2017 when the father saw pictures of his son with a male actor in a tabloid. The son, oh, so this guy, he's banging some hot Italian model. Mercy. The son had already told his father that he was gay the year before. At the time, the father just said, too bad, I wanted grandchildren. See, those old Italian men. I don't care. You bang a woman, give me a grandkid. Mercy. The father then lashed out against the son and the son's male partner. The man's partner, this poor guy's put upon. The man's partner was severely beaten earlier this year by thugs hired by the father. The man was hospitalized after the attack. The couple's car has also been vandalized. I don't know if any relationship, folks, is worth this sort of aggravation. Getting your ass beat by this the stepfather. The father also harassed his wife of 42 years when she decided to leave him. Even the mother had enough. And the father's harassment of the Don escalated when the son intervened to stop his father from beating his mother one day. The son told authorities that his father had had him followed and heckled in the streets and that he'd been forced to change his locks and disrupt his normal routine to avoid any problems. Then the father hired a hitman in May of this year. My son is a thug. Break his fingers, the father allegedly told the hitman. Man, that is quite the father. The hitman stalked the son and his partner for 2 weeks, but didn't see them commit any crimes or even interact with other criminals. So he told the son about the father's plan after slashing the son's tires, as well as the tires on the mother's new car. And I'm not going to read any more of this. The snitch of the hitman. Man. So much for keeping secrets in Italy. You know, I wanted to go there, White Boy Malcolm X, but now I'm not going to. I'm afraid to. I'd be harassed. I guess this guy's in jail, but I guess they are not liking the gays over there or something. This is a follow-up story. This is from KTXS, and this has to do with that silly little 17-year-old drama queen in Texas. They suspended her for wearing her fancy nails. She got her nails done over the holidays, and they said, you can't do that here in Texas. And that queen is having herself a fit. And here's the headline. Clyde, CISD, not yet changing policy that led to suspension of gay male for nail polish. And what's this kid's name? Trevor Wilkinson. And he was placed in school suspension on November 30th. He was going all at it. And apparently, White Boy Malcolm X, last week, he went to the school board a second time to ask them to change the dress code. And obviously, they said no. And there's audio of this. Or this video of it, actually. I could play the audio of it here on the show. But I am not going to pick on Trevor Wilkinson, bless his heart. And, you know, there's a really interesting book. I learned a lot from it. And I think it's also with getting older. But I think it's the guy's name is Mark Manson. And the book is called, I'll give it a cheap plug. It's called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Blank. And that's, you know, the F word. And so it's a really good book. And it talks about not giving a blank. And it doesn't mean like becoming like a nihilist and nothing matters. And yeah, but two points. The first is that, you know, when you're like, you're Trevor Wilkinson, you're 17 years old, every hill is a hill to die on. You give a blank about everything and anything. And that's why you got all these little activist kids running around, because they just care about everything so much. And then you get to my age at 51 and you're like, that's a battle I don't need to fight, or that is not the hill I want to die on. And you kind of mellow over time, and you learn about what's important in life and what's not important in life. And that's kind of the theme of the book, is understanding what are the hills to die on and what is important. And when you kind of give up caring about things that really don't matter, right? And I always try to ask myself when I get frustrated about something, is this something that is going to matter in a year or so? And if not, I just let it go. I don't care. But Trevor's just going to learn that. He's just a kind of a dopey little 17-year-old kid right now. And he'll figure it out on his own, I'm assuming. I mean, if he gets to be like, my age in 3 decades. Holy crap. Trevor, trust me, if you're listening to this podcast, you will be my age tomorrow. And I know you're like, I am not going to be an old queen like you. Yeah. You will be. Trust me. Give it the, what is it, about the 34 years. Like that, Trevor. Like that, overnight, you will be my age. Trust me. But, you know, I'm not going to pick on him. I will be, I'll be nice today, White Boy Malcolm X. It's, Mama Frost is coming in town. It's Christmas. I'll be nice. But, you know, he'll learn. He'll learn his lesson. It's, nail polish is not the way to go. Okay, this is from Zero Hedge, and here is the headline, UPenn ethicist, old people shouldn't get vaxxed first since they're too white. And this reminds me, I saw when I was looking at some gay stories, they all hate Mike Pence because they have this, there's just this thing around that he just hates gay people, and if he could, he would drive around and shoot them all to death. He'd come up here, White Boy Malcolm X, he'd get us, which is not the case, but it's good folklore for the gay folks to raise money, and they're going to keep at it, but their MAGAs. Mike Pence got himself a COVID shot. And there was a picture in the newspaper about it. But funny, up here in Massachusetts, well, Pocahontas, now she's kind of fake Indian, but she got her COVID shot, and Tweedledum Markey got our senators, our two dopey senators, they got theirs too. So the ruling class, apparently, they're going through the ruling class and getting them all taken care of. But there was also, on Boston.com, there was a story, they're going to start prioritizing prisoners. The folks that murder and rape and steal, they're getting their COVID shots first. I guess because they're trapped and they can't really avoid it. But, you know, who knows? Let's find out about this one, too white. An expert in ethics and health policy at the University of Pennsylvania says old people shouldn't receive COVID-19 vaccinations first because they're too white and society needs to start leveling the playing field. Older populations are whiter, Dr. Harold Schmidt told the New York Times. Look at this. Another one, White Boy Malcolm X. The dopey, this one, folks, we had the dopey millennial guy talking about a cultural appropriation on an orca picture, but this guy is a dopey middle-aged white guy. Another white guy has to show his street cred, how woke he is, by throwing other white people under the bus. Anyway, let's pick back up. Older populations are whiter, Dr. Harold Schmidt told the New York Times, adding, society is structured in a way that enables them to live longer. Instead of giving additional health benefits to those who already have more of them, we can start to level the playing field a bit. Well, Dr. Schmidt, I hate to tell you, sir, but we've already had an article where BIPOC doesn't want this thing. Black people do not want to be at the front of the COVID line because they just assume this is another Tuskegee Airmen experiment. They're like, you white folks, you take it first. And now the good woke white liberals like, I don't think we should. So I don't know who's going to take this. Other than Mike Pence and Pocahontas and Tweedledee Markey, I don't know who else is getting this thing. So I guess we're going to have a lot of free shots going around. White Boy Malcolm X, after the prisoners, we might get to go get to front of the line there because no one else wants it. Schmidt has instead called for essential workers. And the essential workers, folks, if you don't know what those are employees at Whole Foods and employees at the local Tesla dealership so they can keep COVID Karen's life moving. And at the fine wine store is another place. Can't forget that either. And those ranking high on the CDC's Social Vulnerability Index to receive the first jab. The index includes 15 measures derived from the census, such as overcrowded housing, lack of vehicle access, and poverty, to determine, and that, folks, is caused by white supremacy and systemic racism, to determine how urgently a community needs health support with the goal of reducing inequalities. And I'm not reading any more of that. You folks get the picture. Another good woke white liberal. This is a Page Six story. Oh, White Boy Malcolm X, we're almost done. Got a couple more stories left. How's this headline? Connie Chung, who I don't even know if she's relevant anymore. I don't even know why she's wasting the ink on this one, but dishes dirt on CBS, ABC colleagues, plus Letterman and The Undoing. So I guess she is doing something. She's plugging something. So she's yapping her mouth again. So let's find out what's going on in Connie's world. Connie Chung, the former ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN anchor, has dished in a revealing new interview on behind-the-scenes tension with colleagues, including Diane Sawyer, Barbara Walters, and Dan Rather, as well as her seemingly flirtatious relationship with David Letterman and how she ruffled Hugh Grant's feathers during her cameo in the recent HBO hit The Undoing. So just like the last podcast we have, what did I say? Hell hath no fury like a woman's court. Or a queen. We want to be kind of gender neutral on this, even though there are seven genders, which I don't know all of, but there are seven genders, but we're going to be completely gender neutral on all it. So Connie is just, she's pissed off and she's going to throw some people under the bus. And let's find out how. On Andrew Goldman's The Originals podcast for Los Angeles Magazine, Chung said that working with Rather at CBS was like a scene out of Psycho, while her treatment at ABC working with Walters and Sawyer was not unlike what Tonya Harding did to Nancy Kerrigan. She also said of Letterman, off the air, he's dark, and recalled how she got the evil eye from the director of The Undoing, Suzanne Bier. Chung, 74, began her career as a CBS Evening News correspondent in the 1970s, before heading to NBC and ultimately winding back up at CBS as his marquee co-anchor with Rather in the 1990s. And I remember that. We used to watch, when I was a kid, we used to watch, that was the news channel we watched at dinner time. We watched the CBS Evening News, and it was Walter Cronkite, and then it was Dopey Dan Rather. And I remember when she joined that, and because I just, you know, you fall into a pattern. So when I watched the evening news, I would always watch CBS, even if I wasn't living at home. And there she is with Dan Rather. And that was a train wreck, those two. But while Rather was outwardly very Texas gentlemanly, she told Goldman, if I turned my back, I felt like it might be a scene of Psycho in the shower. So she's saying that Dan Rather is a two-faced backstabber, which I can see totally. Later, when I went to ABC News, I joined with both Barbara Walters and Diane Sawyer there, and I thought, oh, this is going to be great. It'll be three women who get along. Does anyone believe that? I don't. I don't. It's funny. Some of my closest, dearest, oldest friends, and not by age, just the amount of time I've known them, are women. It's funny how women are about other women. Man, they are just... I remember, I don't know if I should tell the story. Okay, I will. I was interviewing at a job years ago. It was in Denver, actually. I think I told you the story at the time. And I was interviewing, and the office I was interviewing at was mostly women. And a woman in my life, and I will not say who, told me, you do not want to work with a bunch of women. And of course, I'm trying to be politically correct. I'm like, well, why not? Why would I not want to work with a bunch of women? I'm a gay man. Gay men always get along with women. And she started in about backstabbing and gossiping and all sorts of stuff. I'm like, oh, okay. There is not harmony in the tribe there. So all this talk about women power, there's a lot of underlying tension there. So I was like, good to know. And I didn't get the job anyway, so I'm like, good, I'm glad. Instead, she found a scene not unlike what Tonya Harding did to Nancy Kerrigan. So apparently, folks, Barbara Walters, Barbara Wawa, and Diane Sawyer are a couple of mean girls. Because when I got to ABC, both Diane and Barbara were in the same sort of arena and of trying to get these big interviews. So when I tried to go after them, I was told I could not. Mm-mm, don't do that. That Barbara and Diane were the only ones who could compete for the interview, and I had to stand down. And I said, really? Well, yes, because those mean girls will get you. She wound up upsetting the ABC apple cart by landing a 2001 interview with Representative Gary Condit about the disappearance of intern Chandra Levy. During Chung's career, she became one of Letterman's favorite guests, and fans felt there was a chemistry between the late-night show host and the anchor, ooh, that's creepy, who's been happily married to Maury Povich since 1984. I had this thing for him, and he had a thing for me. Ugh, I have a thing about wanting to throw up just thinking about that. And I really think it was inexplicable in that respect, she said of Letterman on Goldman's podcast. And yet, I really don't have a thing for him. Do you know what I mean? She further explained. I love people who have a sense of humor and who are charming, and he was that when he was on the air. And this is where she sticks the knife into Dave's back. Listen to this, folks. But off the air, he's dark. He's a dark, unhappy sort of, I don't mean he's unhappy, he's a kvetch. He's a goyish kvetch. She also said of Letterman, he's antisocial is what he is, socially retarded. Woo! She used the R word, folks. She's going to be in some trouble. Man, oh man. So Connie is complaining about Dan Rather being a two-faced backstabber, and look what she just... She's called... I mean, David Letterman, I tell you, he has gotten like cranky old man. I think that's where I'm headed. He's just like this bitter, bitter old man. Just really bad. He's just really cranky. Apparently, he's also socially retarded. Enough of that. This is from... I need to learn how to pronounce this guy's name. Bongino. Bongiano? I'll just say Bongino.com. And here's the headline. Seattle politician who defunded the police called 911 to report a crime she wants to legalize. So this... Well, there's Joanne Hardesty in Portland, but this chick, look at this white boy Malcolm X. It's some hideous middle-aged ginger chick. She probably, if she were 20 years younger, she'd be off rioting in New York. Seattle City Councilwoman Lisa Herbold has been one of the drivers of the defund the police movement in that city. She also is pushing a law that would give blanket immunity for misdemeanor crimes as long as the person committing the crime was poor, homeless, drug addicted, or had a mental illness. Apparently, like so many other liberals, Herbold thinks her wonderful ideas shouldn't apply when she's the one being victimized. She definitely is like Joanne Hardesty and the Lyft driver. On Friday, a man tossed a rock through her living room window and Herbold called the police. You know, the police she wants to defund because vandalism, a crime she doesn't think the poor, homeless, drug addicted, or mentally ill should be punished for, was committed against her. According to Herbold, she was on the west side of the living room near the kitchen when she heard a loud noise that sounded like a gunshot and dove into the kitchen for cover. You see that woman falling to the ground. When one of those awful cops she wants to defund showed up to help, she told the officer, who probably, folks, is probably a racist, her staff has received anonymous phone threats recently, but nothing in particular that links the threats to today's incident. So, interesting question. If Lisa Herbold's law passed and someone were to pay poor, homeless, and mentally ill people $5 to throw rocks at Lisa Herbold's house, would they be convicted of a crime even if they didn't fit into those categories? Maybe, but what if that person paid someone who was mentally ill to do it for them? Who wrote this? I like this guy. John Hawkins over at Bongino.com. I like his sense of humor. These sound like jokey, ridiculous questions, but Seattle is getting so detached from reality that these are issues that need to be considered. Meanwhile, police officers are leaving the Seattle force in droves, and the city is on pace to have the highest number of homicides that it has seen in years. And here's how he closes out the article. At the end of the day, mistakes like the one Seattle is making tend to be self-correcting problems because guess what? People can virtue signal all they want, but no one wants a rock thrown through their window. And I don't disagree with you, John. I really don't, but it's going to be interesting to see how they roll that back. Because I think, especially like New York is a no-bail state, right? So you can go and you can be some raging ginger chick in New York with your buddies. And white boy Malcolm X only found one of the scummy white kids that she was riding with cute. I'm just saying it because I got in trouble last time for saying you liked them all, but just the one. But you and your pals can run up and down New York and just trash and, you know, create a whole bunch of chaos. They'll arrest you, maybe, but they're just going to let you back. They're going to let you right back out. No bail. Just out you go. But people are going to get used to that. Be like, hey, let's go riot this weekend and have some fun and just trash the place. Because you're not going to get really young arrested. If you get arrested, you're going to get released. And even if you get arrested, you're not going to get prosecuted. And then so you start to dial that back and say, okay, we are actually going to arrest you and we're going to hold you and we're going to have bail. People are like, what? What the what? You can't do that. And then people are like, well, we're actually going to prosecute this crime. And people are like, what? They're going to go nuts. They're literally going to lose their foam at the mouth, radical liberal minds. You try to hold them accountable for anything, they are going to go berserk. And a place like Seattle, a place like New York, Portland, can you see? Wait till they try. Wait, that pansy boy, Ted Wheeler out there, that stupid pajama boy. Wait till see if he tries to like put on his adult, his big boy pants and act like a man for once and find his spine and find his testicles. Let's see how they react to that. They'll burn something and he'll go crying like a little bitch and apologize again. Not with the current leadership. Not with this, what's this stupid chick's name again? Seattle City Councilwoman Lisa Herbold. Good job there, Lisa. Okay, folks, this is our last story, and I am being a good host, and I am ending it with a smoking gun. However, this is not our smoking gun Florida story, because I thought that was kind of weak. This is a Michigan story, and here is the headline, Parents Must Pay Son for Purge of Porn Collection. Man, 42, filed lawsuit after Kin trashed his XXX film library. And before I start reading this, folks, if you've got a youngster listening to the show with you, as I said last week, first, shame on you, because this is probably a little bit too adult-themed for them. But this article, folks, is really adult-themed. So definitely get your kids out of the room for this one. And this is a news article, so it's in print. Your kids can probably find it online anyway. But I'm just saying, right now, you know, get them out of the room. Throw them out. We're not talking about Santa this time, but just throw them out of the room anyway. A Michigan couple will have to pay their 42-year-old son back for destroying his massive pornography stash, a federal judge ruled in a case that included the filing of a 43-page inventory of the man's porn sex toy collection. Great Caesar's ghost. This guy must have had four arms the size of my legs. In an opinion issued last month, Judge Paul Maloney granted a summary judgment in favor of David Working, who loves porn, folks, who last year sued his parents, Paul and Beth, who are probably despondent that their son has such a sick fascination with pornography, both of whom are 68. Maloney will issue an opinion on damages after the parties make further submissions to the court. After divorcing his wife, Merkel moved in with his parents in late 2016. I'm sorry, folks. I don't believe he divorced her. I bet she divorced his ass. It's probably like, my husband has got more porn than every high school boy in this state. I got to get out of here because I want to be a part of that. Bringing along personal property that included a large collection of pornographic material, according to the court filing. But after tensions between David and his parents were running high, Maloney noted, and I wonder why, Workings moved to Indiana, leaving his porn collection in his parents' Grand Haven home. I wonder what he was doing without it. Poor guy. The Workings subsequently tossed their son's belongings, prompting him to file a destruction of property complaint with police. I would assume, White Boy Malcolm X, that would be abandonment of property, but I guess not in Michigan. Beth Working told police that before David was allowed to move in, it was requested that he not bring any of his pornography. She added that they knew David had issues with pornography, according to the police report. Beth, honey, your son does not have issues. He's got severe issues with that much porn, which we'll detail in a second. While packing David's belongings after he departed, his parents found a large amount of pornography that they were upset about being in the residence. Working's mother, cops reported, advised the items were destroyed and discarded. After state prosecutors declined to pursue charges against his parents, so this pervert with his massive porn stash actually sicked the police and wanted them criminally charged with destroying his porn stash, Working filed a U.S. District Court lawsuit against them claiming that the 12 boxes of porn and sex toys were worth about, are you sitting down, White Boy Malcolm X? Yes, you are. $25,000. Man, I know what this guy was doing every Friday and Saturday night, enjoying that stash. In inventory filed in the federal case, listen to this, folks, 428 VHS tapes. I didn't even know those things still existed. And probably got a bunch of millennials going, what the hell is a VHS tape? What is that? That sounds crazy. Listen, kids, that was the predecessor of the long gone. I guess DVDs are now gone too, pretty much. I don't think everything streams. So when you kids can just go online, you can go to Pornhub and just stream something, right? But in the old days, they had like nudie magazines and then they had VHS tapes. And sometimes if you played too much, like this guy probably did, the tape would warp. And then they got DVDs, which you could play ad infinitum and they wouldn't warp, but they would scratch. And now they stream them. So you kids don't have to worry about all that. But this guy had 428 VHS tapes, 1,605 DVDs, and dozens of sex toys that Working alleged were disposed of by his parents. And I don't know what kind of sex toys? Dozens of them, White Boy Malcolm X. This guy, 1,605 DVDs, you think he couldn't digitize that? But this guy, I don't want to know what he's doing with those. You see this guy like in a Barca lounger with a VHS tape. Probably has like an old boxy TV too. And he's got his, you know, a plethora of sex toys just strewn around the room, having fun. Anyway, All sex toys bought within a year of each other never used the inventory noted. And I'm calling BS on that. You pervert. I bet this guy was having fun. Working's collection. Okay, folks, this is where it gets a little bit more naughty, as if the last part of it wasn't, but definitely get the kids out now. Working's collection included titles like Hey, My Grandma is a Whore 18. So there are 18 of these titles with Grandma being a hoe. So I guess one wasn't enough, five wasn't enough, 10 wasn't enough. I wonder if there are more, but I'm not going to find out because I don't ever want to see Grandma having sex. Forced to Lactate 7. Oh, God. Man. Now, that's a fetish right there. You want to talk about the guy, the trans man who identifies as a dog being a kink. That lactate. Speaking of which. Yes, White Boy Malcolm X. Speaking of which. I just got done doing The Boys. I mean, watching the. No, folks. Watch the show is called The Boys. It's not a porn. It's on Amazon Prime. Doing The Boys. It's been one of those days, folks. It's been one of those weekends. So I've got finished watching The Boys on Amazon Prime, which was a show about kind of corrupt superheroes. But the guy that kind of like the Superman type, he's into like lactating milk. So that's his thing, is breast milk. So I guess this would be for him. Forced to Lactate 7. Another one, Lesbian Squirting Midgets. And I want to butt blank a fatty 3. His sex toys. As if that wasn't bad enough, folks, I want to butt blank a fatty 3. His sex toys included a $300 stone dildo, a Fleshlight Freaks alien dildo, and Honey Bear lubricant valued at $25.34. So in summary, because that's the end of the article, David and his wife got a divorce. I wonder why. And David moves home and mom is like, do not bring that porn home. And David does anyway. And then David moves to Indiana because they're getting in fights. And then the parents go, oh my good God, what is this crap? And they tossed it. And he is suing them. This David working has literally no shame, folks, that he is willing to go public. He wanted him criminally prosecuted. Now he's suing them in civil court because they threw away, I want a butt blank, a fatty 3, and they threw away a $300 stone dildo, and he went public with this. Because he wants that 25 grand so he can go buy, you know, I want a butt blank, a fatty 4. And my grandma is a whore 25 and whatever. Lesbian squirting. Just good God. Honey Bear lubricant, White Boy Malcolm X. Goodness. Goodness gracious. This guy has a lot of dildos for a straight man. And I'm telling you right now, David, you are not coming into this drive. Do not say you're questioning. Do not say you're bisexual. I got enough issues in my tribe right now as it is. You are not coming in. I don't care how many dildos you have. God. Oh my, okay, I got to stop the show. We're done. Okay, folks, thank you so much for joining us today on today's podcast. Remember that we will not be here Wednesday. So in the meantime, you know, if you celebrate it, have a Merry Christmas this coming Friday. I will have a great one with lots of wine and Mama Frost. Remember also that you can reach me a couple of different ways. Miller at MillerFrostOnline.com is my email. My Twitter suspension ends. One last time, screw you, Twitter. Screw you, because saying that Hunter Biden is a Chinese whore is not hateful conduct. It is reality, so get over it. I should be back on Twitter active in the next couple of days, and then my Parler handle is at Miller Frost. In the meantime, until next week, have a great holiday. Have a great week. I'm just going to take it easy with Mama Frost, and we'll see you back here soon, and in the meantime, take care.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.